You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
In 1990, the undisputed heavyweight boxing champion of the world was Mike Tyson. This is back when boxing was still relevant. You may not remember it. Tyson was undefeated. He was 37-0. His fights usually lasted no more than a couple of minutes. Sometimes they'd go two rounds, but he would just thoroughly intimidate and then just annihilate his opponents. He was called invincible, untouchable. He was called the baddest man on the planet, Mike Tyson. My college buddies and I used to say, how much would it take for you to get into the ring for one round with Tyson? And I always figured, you know, for $1 million, I'll just like run from him for like 3 minutes. You know, I'll just run around Keystone Cops style up in the ring. But he was a bad man. On February 10th, 1990, Tyson was slated to defend his title against a lesser-known fighter named Buster Douglas. And the sports world was just buzzing because everybody couldn't wait to see Tyson just unleash his fury on another helpless opponent. And we wanted to see it too. So my buddies and I went over to this little dive called Posse East over by the UT campus. And we were just going to, we figured we'll have a quick dinner and watch a quick fight and call it an evening. When the fight started, it was really obvious from the very beginning that Buster Douglas was not afraid of Mike Tyson. He was the one pursuing. He was the one punching. He was the one dominating in workmanlike fashion. And over, as the rounds went on, he was taking Mike Tyson apart, which no one had ever seen before. Tyson's left eye was badly swollen. His corner was so confused because they'd never had to coach this far into a fight before. You know, fifth round, sixth round, seventh, eighth, ninth. About a minute into the 10th round, Douglas landed a right uppercut to Tyson's chin that totally stunned him. And as he was staggering backwards, Douglas came with four quick punches. Bam, 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 bam. And it was over. Tyson was on the ground for the first time ever in his career. The crowd is going wild. The ring announcers are going wild. At Posse East, we're going wild. Because the baddest man on the planet had just gotten knocked out in the 10th round. And this is what the ringside announcer said moments after the fight. You can watch this on YouTube. I'm sure you will later. He said, suddenly Mike Tyson, perceived as this giant monolith, has been reduced to being just another heavyweight champion who got defeated. And I thought, oh, how the mighty fall and how they fall hard. Today in Exodus, you just heard it read, we are looking at another famous 10-round fight. It's a marquee matchup, actually. In one corner, you've got the baddest man on the planet, the invincible, the untouchable Pharaoh, king of Egypt, versus, in the other corner, an opponent who Pharaoh says he's actually never heard of before. Remember, he said that last week at the beginning of Exodus chapter 5. He said, never heard of him. This is how Exodus 5 begins. Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Israel, let my people go. But Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice? I do not know the Lord. I don't know Yahweh. In other words, Yahweh who? Never heard of him. Now, after what we see in our text today, Pharaoh will have heard of him, right? The whole world will have heard of him. If you have a Bible, I want you to look at Exodus 7. We're actually going to cover a lot of ground today. We're going to cover four chapters in the Exodus story, so we're just going to hit a few highlights quickly along the way. But I want you to be able to follow how this fight unfolds. And so if you can get where you can see a Bible, it would help as we go through it. Now, here's where we're headed. We're going to look at the preview, then the pattern, then the plagues, then the point, right? The preview of the fight, the pattern of how the fight is going to go down, then the plagues, which is the fight itself, and then we'll end by just briefly looking at the point of the plagues. Now, remember where we are in the story. As we've looked at Exodus, Israel has been enslaved in Egypt for 400 years. God has heard their cry. He's raised up a deliverer, Moses. He's appeared to Moses. He's sent Moses to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and to say, let my people go. Pharaoh's response that we saw last week was not to let them go, but to make it more difficult, make it harder on the Israelites. It's kind of a more bricks, less straw kind of thing. And so now Israel and Moses are in despair. And they're like, God, what are you doing? This is not working out. It hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse for us. And God says to them, hey, don't worry. I keep my promises. Like, I'm faithful to my covenant. I will bring you out of slavery, and I will bring you into the land I promised to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And that's where we pick up in Exodus 7, and we got a big old huge fight on our hands. Exodus 7, let's look at the preview of this fight. The preview for the entire plague narrative is found in the first seven verses here of chapter 7. If you read those seven verses, you see what's going to happen over the next few chapters. Verse 1 of Exodus 7, and the Lord said to Moses, see, I've made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. And whenever you see Lord, you may know this in all caps, it's a translation of Yahweh, which is the personal name of God. Yahweh came to Moses in Exodus 3 in the burning bush. He revealed himself. He said, I am the eternally existent one. I'm the one true God. My name is Yahweh. But now he is saying, you're going to go as my representative. I'm not in this fight with Pharaoh. I'm not going to talk directly to Pharaoh. Moses, you will be like God to him. You will be my representative, because just as Pharaoh was the physical, incarnational representative of the gods of Egypt, Moses, you'll be my voice. You'll be my representative. You'll be my messenger. Now, what is the message you're to take? Verse 2, you shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land. It's a familiar message. You know this message. If you have been around Christianity or the church for very long, you probably sang the song one time, didn't you? Right? Na na na, na 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 na. Pharaoh, Pharaoh. Come on. Oh, baby, let my people go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? You know the song. I think one of the deep embarrassments of evangelicalism is bad imitation, where we take something good from the culture and then make it worse. Right? I went to a conference one time and we sang that song as a worship song. I was like a college student. So I hang my head in shame that I've done that. But I know the message, and that is the message that's going to be repeated again and again throughout the text. Pharaoh, let my people go, and unfortunately the message is going to fall on deaf ears. Look at verse 3. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Pharaoh's heart will be hard. His ears will be closed. Moses, he will not listen to you. But catch this, it's not going to be a failed mission because of what God is going to do, right? And continuing in verse 4, look what God is going to do. And I want you to see in these two verses how God's hand is used here. Continuing in verse 4, then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring out my hosts, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out my people Israel from among them. Notice how the hand of God will be at work in the Exodus story. For Israel, it will be a hand of salvation, right? For Exodus, it will be a hand of judgment. And Philip Ryken says that God uses both sides of his hand in the Exodus. And he says that with the palm of his hand, he gently leads Israel out of bondage. But then Egypt gets the back of his hand in judgment. Pharaoh and the Egyptians are going to experience great acts of judgment. God calls them here signs and wonders or miracles. We call them most famously the 10 plagues. And so this is the preview of what's to come. Moses, you're my representative. You're like God in the flesh to Pharaoh. Go speak to him. Tell him to let my people go. He's not going to listen to you. Then I'm going to bring great acts of judgment on the Egyptians so that they will know that I'm God. And then I'm going to bring you out. That's how the fight is going to go down. Just so you know. Now, you and Aaron go see Pharaoh. And in verse 6, which I think is the first miracle of the story, look what happens. Moses and Aaron did so. Right? They did just as the Lord commanded them. No excuses, finally, for Moses. He just trusts God and obeys God. And I love verse 7. Now Moses was 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. And I love that they threw that little detail in, right? Because apparently you never retire from the mission of God. Moses is real old here. Like, he's eligible for discounted coffee at Dairy Queen, and yet he is not eligible to retire from the mission of God, because God actually has been preparing him for this moment. He doesn't know it, but he has 40 years of fruitful ministry still ahead. Just a little parenthesis here. I found a little quote from D.L. Moody this week that I thought was great. D.L. Moody once said that Moses spent 40 years in Pharaoh's court thinking he was a somebody. He spent 40 years in the desert learning that he was a nobody. And then he spent 40 years showing what God can do with a somebody who found out that he was a nobody. I love that. It took him 80 years, but he realized finally, God is the one who makes us somebody. God is the one who makes us fruitful. All right, that's the preview of the fight. I want you to look at the pattern of the fight. The next few verses, verse 8 through 13 in chapter 7, I think give us the pattern of how each round of the fight is going to go down. It's a little pre-fight sparring, but it's how each round is going to go down. Let me read verses 8 through 13. Then the Lord said to Pharaoh, or said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Prove yourselves by working a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff, cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.' So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and the magicians of Egypt also did the same by their secret arts. And each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said." I mean, the Lord said he's not going to listen to you. And it went just that way. Now, I think what happens in these few verses begins to reveal to us that this is a supernatural fight, right? This is a supernatural power encounter that's about to happen. This is like an epic theological throwdown that's about to happen. And in one corner, we've got Yahweh, the God of little old Israel, a bunch of no-account slaves. In the other corner, we've got the entire pantheon of gods that Egypt worshipped, the multiplicity of gods that worshipped by the Egyptians, the most powerful empire in the world. And so Moses and Aaron, they come to Pharaoh, and he's like, "Show me what you got." And so Aaron takes his staff and throws it down, and it becomes a snake. Now, I don't think this is like a random party trick. Right? This is not just like, hey, let's do a magic trick so Pharaoh knows that God has some power and we've got some skills and that we're serious here. This is not random at all. It's actually very intentional. It's very theologically significant what happens here, because snakes were the Egyptian sign of power. Like, snakes were the religious symbol of Pharaoh's sovereignty and authority. Like, you've seen the headdress of King Tut and how it sort of fans out like the hood of a cobra. And on that mask, there's actually a golden carved cobra. And so when Moses and Aaron throw down the snake, they are directly challenging Pharaoh's authority. But Pharaoh punches back because he's got some guys too. And so he brings out his magicians and they do the same thing. Doesn't say how they do it, just says they use their secret arts. I don't know if it's demonic. I don't know if it's an illusion. They throw down their staffs, snakes, right? And I think this is kind of a funny moment because something happens next. Aaron's staff swallows up their staffs. So I think Pharaoh's just kind of, standing there all proud, and then all of a sudden, gulp, gulp, and it's just like, wah, wah. This moment that thought was going to go his way didn't go his way at all. Now, Egyptians thought that if you swallow something, it was a way of acquiring all of its powers, right? So if I swallow something, its life and its power is in me. Yahweh was saying, all of the authority and sovereignty that belongs to Pharaoh, I'm swallowing up. It belongs to me. But Pharaoh is unmoved. He hardens his heart, just like God said. And so this is how the pattern of every round is going to go. Moses and Aaron come to Pharaoh, let my people go. He doesn't listen. God brings a sign or a miracle. Sometimes the magicians, at least in the first two plagues, are able to replicate the miracle. Pharaoh hardens his heart, doesn't listen. Every round is going to go just like that. But don't miss the biggest thing in this miracle of the snake. And the staff and the serpents. What God is saying to Egypt, what God is saying to Egypt's gods and Pharaoh himself is, I'm going to swallow you up. I am going to eat you alive. You have no chance in this fight. Now, let's look at the plagues themselves. We've seen the preview. We've seen the pattern. I want to look at the main event, which is the plagues. One way to think about the plagues is they are a systematic dismantling of Pharaoh. And Egypt's gods. Each of the plagues deals with some aspect of creation, right? They deal with the natural order. So they're supernatural, but they're also natural. Like I don't know if you remember a few weeks ago, we said the main job description of the Pharaoh was to maintain the natural order, to maintain the harmony of the natural order. That was his main, it was called Mayet. And it was on his shoulders to maintain the order of things. But in the plagues, the natural order of things, the wheels start to come off in the natural order of things, don't they? The plagues are sort of a move toward chaos. They are a disruption of the natural order. They're an uncreation of sorts. Peter N. says that God uses here creation in service of redemption, meaning only the Creator can control creation, and God, the Creator, uses creation here to save Israel, but to judge Egypt. Now, I want to look at the first nine plagues, the first nine rounds. We'll look at the 10th one next week. Again, we're just going to hit them real quick because we don't have time to look at them in detail, but I just want you to see a few things about them. So look at round one. If you look at chapter 7, the first plague is water turned into blood. Chapter 7, verse 17. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn into blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile. Skip down to verse 20. Moses and Aaron did as the Lord commanded in the sight of Pharaoh. And in the sight of the servants, he lifted up the staff, struck the water of the Nile, and all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish in the Nile died, and the Nile stank, so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. There was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. This is an attack on the very life source of Egypt. Everything in Egypt revolved around the Nile. It was the source of drinking water. It was the source of food. It was the center of commerce for them. The Nile actually was worshipped as a god. Right? And this god, the god of the Nile, would flood or inundate the Nile once a year, and it would bring much-needed irrigation and fertilization to the agriculture of Egypt. But listen, if the water is contaminated, it doesn't bring with it life. It brings with it death. This is a gut punch to the god of the Nile, one of the main gods of Egypt. But Pharaoh's, if you keep reading, it says Pharaoh's magicians were able to replicate this with their secret arts. And I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they brought in a glass of water and said, see, we can do this too. And I imagine Pharaoh's going, no, I don't need you to replicate it. I need you to reverse this thing, right? We need to go from blood to water here. But they replicate it, and Pharaoh's like, yeah, we can do that too. His heart is hardened. He doesn't listen. Just as the Lord said. Round two, frogs. All over the place, frogs. Look at chapter 8, verse 5. And the Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt. So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. Now look, I know frogs are pretty cool, right? Some of you may think frogs are kind of cute. There was a frog in my driveway the other night, and I was like, hey, little guy. How you doing? He's looking up at me with his frog eyes, and he's doing this thing with his neck, and finally he just kind of hopped off into my yard, and I was like, yeah, frogs are pretty cool. Right. Frogs everywhere are not cool, right? This is not cool. The frogs were all over the place. You remember what God said in creation? He said that human beings would have dominion over the animal kingdom. This is a reversal of that, because now the frogs are everywhere and the frogs are taking over. This is a punch against the Egyptian god, the goddess of fertility or childbirth, which was symbolized by the head of a frog. Right? God is saying, hey, you're killing my people's baby boys, throwing them in the Nile. You know what I'm going to do? I'm coming after your goddess of fertility by bringing frogs up out of the Nile. But the Egyptian magicians do the same thing with their secret arts. And again, I'm thinking Pharaoh's like thinking, no, guys, less frogs, not more frogs. But they create frogs too. But here's the deal. They're not able to get rid of them. And so in round two, Pharaoh shows this sign of weakness. And he comes to Moses and he's like, hey, yeah, we can make frogs too, but guess what? We can't get rid of them. Can you ask your God to get rid of them and I'll let you guys go? And Moses is like, yeah, all right, let's get rid of them. But Pharaoh hardens his heart once the frogs are gone. He doesn't listen. Round three, gnats. Look down in verse 17 of chapter 8. Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth. So now the plague is not coming from the water, it's coming from the dust of the earth. And there were gnats on man and beast, and all the dust of the earth became gnats in all the land of Egypt. And I think this English word that we use, gnat, here may not capture what these little bugs were, because they had, you know, a little bite to them. And so some scholars suggest that these are more like mosquitoes, right? Which does not sound like a plague to us. It's like a picnic at Zilker Park for us. We're like, you want to see mosquitoes, Egyptians? Come to Austin in the summertime after all this rain. But nevertheless, mosquitoes are all over the place, biting them. And this time, the magicians can't do it. They're like, no, this one came from the dust, and our expertise is water. That's where our God is. That's where our power source is. We can't do dust. We're out of our element here, literally. And they say, this is the finger of God. And yet Pharaoh's heart hardened. Round four, flies. Look at verse 24 in chapter 8. It says, there came great swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses throughout all the land of Egypt. The land was ruined by the swarms of flies. Now, we don't think about flies that much until they invade our space. I don't even think about flies until they are not where they're supposed to be, right? This week, we opened a box of expired oatmeal in our pantry. And all these, I don't even know what you call them, like pantry flies or pantry moths, like flew out of this box, and now they're flying around in there where all our food is. And I got to tell you, my wife went to war on those little suckers this week. Like, it was search and destroy in our pantry, right? There was all kinds of stuff going on there to get rid of these things, because flies, you can be outside, you can't be in our house. We will kill you. And in this chapter 8 here, it says that the flies were all up in the Egyptians' houses. They were all over Egypt, except in one place, the land of Goshen, where the Egyptians, or where the Israelites lived. And so for the first time, we see God make a distinction between Israel and Egypt, and he protects Israel in this plague. But Pharaoh asked God to take the flies away, and when he does, he hardens his heart again. Round five, we see the Egyptian livestock die. Again, God makes a distinction between Israel and Egypt, because only the Egyptians' horses and cows and sheep die, not the Israelites. Round six is boils. Look at chapter 9. Boils sounds awesome, doesn't it? Chapter 9, verse 10. So they took soot from the kiln and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses threw the soot in the air, and it became boils breaking out on the sores of man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boils came upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians. So this time, the magicians aren't even trying to do the trick. They can't even, they're like, we're out. We're tapping out completely. And isn't it interesting that Moses would reach into a brick kiln, this instrument used, an instrument of slavery to torment the Israelites, and throw the soot into the air, and that soot would in turn torment the Egyptians. And one commentator said, is that not poetic justice? But watch what happens. This is really interesting in verse 12. But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had spoken. This is the first time it says it that way. Usually Pharaoh's hardening his own heart, but this time the Lord, Yahweh hardens Pharaoh's heart. So Yahweh is in control of every aspect of this fight, right down to Pharaoh's heart. Like, even if Pharaoh wanted to quit the fight, God is keeping him on the ropes. God is pulling him back into the ring so that he continues the fight. He's prolonging this fight by hardening his heart. Because to God alone be the glory, right? Like, no one is going to be able to look back on this fight someday and say, you know what, Pharaoh finally softened up and let him go. Like, the Israelites were finally saved because Pharaoh was merciful. No. The Israelites will be saved because God is powerful and God is merciful. And God alone gets the glory. So Pharaoh's heart is hardened and he doesn't give in. Round 7 is hail unleashed from heaven. Large hailstones destroy animals and people and plants. Except for in Goshen, there's no hail. Round 8 is locusts. The locusts come and they take over the land. It's a sign of judgment elsewhere in the Bible. They come over and they eat everything. They devour everything that the hail had left. And then round 9, the last plague we'll look at today, is darkness. Look over in chapter 10, verse 21. Darkness. Then the Lord said, in Exodus 10, 21, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness to be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was pitch darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days, and said they couldn't even see one another. And this is a blow to the Egyptian sun god Ra, because the sun is not even helping at all here. But more importantly, this is an uncreation. This is a reversal of creation, because what is the first thing that God said in creation? Let there be light. And here he says, let there be darkness. It's a return from order back to chaos. And Pharaoh is failing miserably at his job description of maintaining the cosmic order, isn't he? But look how this ninth plague ends at the end of chapter 10, verse 27. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to them, get away from me. Take care never to see my face again, for on the day you see my face, you shall die. And Moses said, as you say, I will not see your face again. So Pharaoh will not give in. He thinks he is still in the fight. He thinks he's still got a chance. But the knockout punch is actually coming. It's coming next week in the 10th round. But here's what I want to do. I want to close by just for a moment looking at the point of all this. Like, what is the point of the plagues? Like, why did God do it this way? And I think there's a couple of points. The first one, you see it there in the text in Exodus 9. If you look at Exodus 9, verse 14. Exodus 9, 14. This is what God says to Pharaoh. He says, for this time I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people so that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. Hey, Pharaoh, remember that time you said you didn't know me? Well, you are going to know me. And all of Egypt is going to know me because there's no one like me. I'm the sovereign one. Verse 15, for by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. Pharaoh, don't you know that if I wanted this thing to be over, it'd be over like that? I could have annihilated you immediately, but instead I've drawn this thing out long time, out in the open for everyone to see. And you want to know why I've done that? Verse 16, for this purpose I have raised you up, Pharaoh, to show you my power so that my name may be proclaimed in all the earth. See, Pharaoh, my plan was not just for you to know who God is and for the Egyptians to know who God is, but for the whole world to know who God is. God raised Pharaoh up and soundly beat him down in the most epic heavyweight fight in human history so that his name would be famous all over the earth, right? So that people like us today, thousands of years later, on the other side of the world, would still be saying, hey, did you hear what God did to Pharaoh? Oh, man. It was amazing. It's like the most amazing story you've ever heard. Did you hear about that? I mean, they're still making movies about this story. Like Batman is Moses. Have you seen this? God and Kings? Christian Bale plays Moses. Why wouldn't he? It's the greatest story ever. And God gets the glory. The first point of why the plagues happen like this, the reason God did it this way, I think, is so that Pharaoh would know God Egypt would know God, and the whole world would know God, and that we would praise him and say, he is awesome. There's no one like him. But there's a second point to the plagues, and it's not quite as obvious, but I think it relates to us very well as Christians today. And it's found in the first two verses of chapter 10. Look at Exodus 10, verse 1 and 2. Then the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine among them, and that you may tell in the hearing of your son and of your grandson how I have dealt harshly with the Egyptians and what signs I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Lord. In other words, Moses, I'm doing this so that you and all the Israelites would know who God is. Right? I'm doing this so that you, your son, your grandson, your great-grandson would know who God is. See, Israel also had to be convinced that God is God, that he's the sovereign one. They'd been in slavery for 400 years under the most powerful empire in the world, and so they needed a reshaping, a reforming of their understanding of who's in control of the world. Eugene Peterson says that the 10 plagues are sort of an exorcism, sort of a purging. In other words, the plagues are not just used to get Israel out of Egypt. The plagues are used to get Egypt out of the Israelites. Right? The plagues are not just to get Pharaoh out of power. The plagues are actually to get the power of Pharaoh out of the minds of the Israelites, because they see him as the all-powerful one. This is what Eugene Peterson says. He said, if Moses led Israel out of Egypt with their imagination still controlled by Egypt, it wouldn't be long before they would be repeating the way of Egyptian success themselves. As far as they knew, that's what worked. It worked for at least 1,000 years. If their imaginations were not thoroughly cleansed, purged from the evil that they were immersed in, then they would end up doing the same thing as soon as they were in power themselves, oppressing the weak, trampling on the helpless in the name of whatever gods there were out there. And so Israel had to learn who the real God is. You see, Pharaoh's sovereignty was so entrenched in their imaginations that Pharaoh and the Egyptian way of life had to be thoroughly dismantled. Right? It had to be taken apart piece by piece, round by round, where they would know that when they left Egypt, they were leaving behind a bankrupt way of life. That there was nothing about the Egyptian way of life, the power structure in Egypt, the Egyptian pantheon of gods, the Egyptian wealth, Egyptian culture, Egyptian world influence, nothing about that that they would ever envy or seek to replicate ever. They needed to be convinced that God is God and that his way is the way. And the plagues were this elaborate drama, I think, that helped convince them of that. And so you and I need to ask ourselves, am I convinced? Like, am I convinced that God is God? That God is the sovereign one, like, over creation, over circumstances, over political systems, over my relationships, over my plans, over the hearts of people? Am I convinced of that? I think the plagues in Exodus, as you read them, are meant to purge our imaginations of the idea that anything or anyone but God is in control of our lives. I think the plagues are meant to purge our imagination of the idea that anyone or anything but God can give us life or fulfill us or secure our future. I think the plagues are meant to purge our imagination of the idea that anyone or anything but God is worthy of our worship or our trust or our praise. See, the God whose hand directed the frogs and the flies and the hail and the locusts in Exodus is also the God who directs the circumstances of our lives, isn't he? And his hand is at work for our good and for our salvation. You know how we can be convinced of that? We look at the cross. Because on the cross, Jesus felt the back of God's hand. On the cross, the wrath of God was poured out on Jesus, just like it was poured out on the Egyptians in the plagues, so that you and I who have faith in Jesus could be delivered safely in the palm of God's hand, right? Jesus felt the wrath of God so that you and I could be set free to worship the one true God and follow him. That's the promise we have in the cross. Now, you know the promise we have in the resurrection of Jesus, his resurrection from the dead? Our promise that we have in the resurrection of Jesus is that our greatest enemy is forever vanquished. This is the language that 1 Corinthians 15 uses to describe it, and I love this connection. 1 Corinthians 15 says that because Jesus is raised from the dead, death is swallowed up in victory. Isn't that great? Death is eaten alive by Jesus in his resurrection. And all the power that death and sin and Satan had over us now belongs to Jesus. And he is the sovereign one. He's the king. And all the pharaohs that ever enslaved us, sin, Satan, death, have been forever defeated. Amen. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.